You are listening to Breaking Boundaries with Brad Palumbo.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I'm excited to bring you a conversation today with Joe Bishop Henchman, the chair of the Libertarian National Committee and the new head of the Libertarian Party. Joe, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Great to be with you, Brad.
So the Libertarian Party is something that interests me a lot. I consider myself small L libertarian. I think for voter disclosure, I'm registered to vote as a libertarian, but I'm not like a dues paying member. And I honestly don't really identify with any party, really. But I find the Libertarian Party really interesting, and I have closely followed it for a couple years now. So I'm excited to discuss this with you. But you just recently took over as head of the LP. So I guess my main question, just to kick us off, is what does the Libertarian Party stand for?
Sure. And yeah, I just took over in July of 2020, and it's been a wild ride already. And how you just described your situation of, maybe a small L libertarian, but not necessarily ascribing to one party, maybe not that excited about the Democratic or Republican parties. A lot of Americans find themselves in that situation right now, more than ever before. Libertarian Party, in one sentence is don't hurt people, don't take their stuff, and a government that stands for that. As small as possible and empowering individual decisions in a lot of the important policy arguments that are happening now. Because unfortunately, the way it's set up right now is with Democrats and Republicans, they're all fighting to who will have complete power. And if one side has to lose and the other side has to win, and then whoever does it gets to decide everything and control everything. We're offering a different approach where we devolve that power back to the individual in so many issues. And maybe we can dive into a little bit more details in the half hour, but that's the gist of it.
So one question I have is, what change do you hope to bring to the party? Obviously, you wouldn't have run if you thought that it was everything was fine and dandy. So what major directional changes or tonal shifts do you hope to see brought to the party under your leadership?
Sure. Getting people elected. Libertarian Party is founded in the 1970s and adopted a very radical platform for the 1970s to stop the drug war and legalize marijuana, to end the draft, to lower taxes and abolish some of the most destructive forms of taxation, to, you can go on to have equality for LGBT people. Very radical at the time. Today, maybe not even as radical. In fact, I'd say a majority of Americans are with us on our platform on all those issues as just talked about, and on so many more. So, as far as what we stand for, I think we've always been in the right position, and being a political party focused on making sure that we have principle in our politics, and it's not just all about power. Where we've been missing is getting those elected people to be seats at the to have seats at the legislative table, negotiating table. And it's something I recognize because my day job is, as I work in tax policy, I'm going around the country, at least in most years, in working against bad tax ideas and helping get good tax ideas passed, basically trying to get Democrats and Republicans to do libertarian things on tax policy. And it's hard to do without libertarians at the table. And so selfishly, I want to see libertarians elected because it'll make my job easier. I want to see libertarians elected because I think we'll get better policy outcomes. My husband and I, we ran for office in DC to help make sure the DC Libertarian Party got stayed on the ballot. Only about 0.5% of registered voters in DC are registered libertarians, but we got 6-8% of the vote. And a lot of the messaging that worked on that was, it's important to have honest brokers on the council, at the legislative negotiating table. It's important that it not just all be one group of people, which is what it is in the DC government, all approaching it the same way, from the Democratic Party perspective. libertarians, we, more than I think we give ourselves credit, are honest brokers and ability to, we have an ability to bridge gaps. We understand the left in a way the right never will. We understand the right in a way the left never will. So we really can bridge the partisan divide that seems to be making things so difficult for so many things at the in Congress and at the state level. So getting people elected is very important for me.
And why is it in the past? Obviously, the Libertarian Party has a few elected officials around the country, but until this past election cycle had no seats in the state legislatures of any state, as far as I'm aware. So why is it that libertarians haven't more broadly been able to win election in the past? What have they been doing wrong, broadly speaking?
Libertarians, and I include myself in this, we like winning debates, not winning elections. Winning elections takes hard work, and we're not afraid of hard work, but we also like to be right too. And you know, winning elected office means going door to door, phone banking, doing mailers, and coming up with the messaging designed to win over somebody, talking about what we can do that will improve their lives. I think there's been a lot of focus on the conversion, so for lack of a better term, you know, winning somebody over 100% to everything on libertarianism, as opposed to working to elect people and winning over, you know, just enough to get somebody's vote to get somebody elected. I think all of those are important. And, you know, I've worked over the years with every organization in the liberty movement on education efforts, on getting, you know, books and websites out there and videos and spreading all sorts of policy perspectives from policy arguments from a libertarian perspective. But the Libertarian Party is the only one in the liberty movement that can elect people. 501c3s can't do it, even C4s can't do it. So, you know, think tanks aren't going to be able to do that. We're the only ones going to make sure that libertarians get elected. And so that's why I want to make sure that our focus is on that. And as you noted, in November, we managed to get libertarians back into state legislators. So we've got them in a couple states. We managed to elect a couple hundred people at the local level. And that's, you know, the new focus already paying dividends. And I want to keep ramping that up, because success breeds success. As we get libertarians elected at the local level, we'll demonstrate what we bring to the table and build up our farm team for higher elected office beyond that.
So maybe this will be the point where I push back a little bit for the sure. for the first time. Essentially, look, I would love to have a multi-party system with really strong third and fourth viable parties. I think that's wonderful. But you well know that we have a duopoly system that heavily stacks in favor of the two parties, from denying debate admission to denying ballot access. It is very much, the system is slanted against third parties. Not impossible, but makes it much more difficult. So I will ask this, right? We have been able to elect libertarian-leaning folks through the GOP that have accomplished, they might not be libertarian purists 100% on every single issue, but people like Thomas Massey, people like Ron Paul, people like Rand Paul, people like Justin Amash, they were all elected to key federal offices, higher the level than any Libertarian Party official member has been elected to, at least to my knowledge. And they made serious pro-liberty legislative changes happen. And I obviously, they're not purist libertarians, but they're the closest thing we've been able to get elected. Why is it not a better path to try to elect libertarians through the GOP?
I would say the names you listed, and I highly respect all four of those people, are the exceptions that prove the rule. All of those people eventually hit a barrier with the party, Republican Party, and in some cases have been driven out of the Republican Party. So Justin Amash is no longer a Republican. He's joined the Libertarian Party, is very active in helping our recruiting and our expansion efforts. Rand Paul, you know, ran for president and got no traction with the Republican Party. Ron Paul, of course, ran as a libertarian, as our presidential nominee in 1988. Obviously there's been a lot of effort to try to, you know, recruit the next congressman to be a libertarian standard bearer from the Republican Party. But Republican primary electorate isn't interested in that. For the last 4 years, the only thing the Republican primary electorate cared about was, are you loyal to Donald Trump or are you not loyal to Donald Trump? And if you weren't able to check that box, it doesn't matter how good you were on any other issue, you were going to lose your next primary. And that's what we've seen. You know, it's been a long time. For a long time, a lot of people have said, libertarians and conservatives, there's a fusion opportunity there. I mean, that was the case for a lot of the Cold War, where there were, so to speak, common enemies against, the Soviets and against big government expansion at the domestic level. In many ways, Ronald Reagan was able to parlay that into a winning coalition for him. Fusionism, if it ever really lived, died with the Cold War. I think that a lot of the focus that you've seen the Republicans take, in 2004, their top issue was opposing gay marriage, also in that era, top issue was making sure that we expand war and do torture and all of that horrible stuff. And then under the most recent administration, opposing immigration and launching trade wars. There's nothing libertarian about any of this stuff, but these are the key issues for the Republican Party and the primary electorate now. So I think fusionism, frankly, is dead. And libertarians, the names you mentioned, I think, are libertarian Republicans who have been genuinely interested in trying to keep it alive and advance libertarian thought in the Republican Party. Problem is, the Republican Party is not interested in it.
Well, let me ask you then. I mean, what about things like the Tea Party? In many ways, that was a small government movement. And we've seen things like tax cuts, wide-scale deregulation, the appointment of Neil Gorsuch, who's the most libertarian Supreme Court justice, certainly in my lifetime. So I guess I wouldn't be so... I agree with you, right? The GOP on things like trade policy and immigration has become very much not libertarian. But it's also become more libertarian in some ways. The Republican Party has become more pro-gay and more accepting of gay people. It has become more pro-criminal justice reform and open to criminal justice reform. And it's become less neoconservative and less hawkish on foreign policy. So isn't it true to some extent that at the same time, while the GOP has become less libertarian on, like you said, trade policy and immigration and other things, aren't there other serious areas where liberty has been advanced through the GOP?
So all of those issues that you mentioned, living in Washington, D.C., I see where the impetus for all of those come from. And then a lot of that's been the push from the libertarian policy organizations in D.C. and the think tanks and the pressure groups and so forth. So, I mean, that's what got the First Step Act criminal justice bill across the line. That's what got some of those, the libertarian direction of some policies over there. It wasn't the Republican primary electorate. It wasn't the Republican establishment.
But it was Republican politicians who voted for it and signed it into law at the end of the day, in large part.
I mean, that's what we have. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've testified to 36 state legislatures. I've helped get probably about $10 billion worth of tax reductions or bad taxes avoided over
the round of applause for that.
And I'm the first to admit that libertarian elected officials did not play a huge role in all of that because there weren't any. So I had to deal with Republicans and Democrats. So can I name Republicans and Democrats who have been good on libertarian issues? Of course. Just today I noted, Virginia Democrats are abolishing the death penalty. In Illinois, they're eliminating cash bail. In Mississippi and West Virginia, Republicans are debating the elimination of the state income tax. There's always good trends out there. But the question I think what I would respond to your point is, are we going to get better policy from libertarian elected officials versus Republican elected officials that are kind of grudgingly going along with some of these things?
Yeah. And then I guess the question is, how do we get them elected? And one question I have is, I will say I am libertarian leaning on just about every issue. I sometimes, though, feel, especially among the Libertarian Party crowd, that Libertarian Party members or the platform are more anarchist. And I believe in limited government and small government. But whether it's something like abolishing every single welfare program under the sun and having nothing, having no role for the government in education, not even private vouchers. Mm-hmm. It's like, sometimes I think there are a lot more voters out there who are libertarian and want a limited government society, but don't want a full-blown anarcho-capitalist wet dream. And sometimes it feels like that's what LP, the official Libertarian Party line is.
You know, as a political party, we have our different factions and our different groups. And, you know, I freely admit we certainly have a lot of anarchists in our group. They're hardworking activists and many of them are candidates. But I think what you'll see is for a lot of the candidates that run and are talking about kitchen table issues, certainly the successful ones that are winning, they're not the ones talking about, what government will look like 20 or 30 years from now. It's what are the issues that we can deal with today, and trying to make sure that we focus our messaging on that so that we are speaking to voters who would be interested in what are the incremental reforms that we can do now. I do, value the perspective of the how they would describe themselves as the principled libertarians. That we want to make sure that we're not losing sight of the bigger picture there. Because, like when I'm working on tax policy, for instance, we can debate one deduction and whether or not to do it, but I don't want it to ever be unmoored from the broader principles underlying the debate there. And that's a big deficiency that you have in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, because they're not really motivated by any broader principles. It's just kind of what can be rammed through the political process right now. And, the Democrats right now, they want universal healthcare, a government-run healthcare system. And so they're debating, they'll get behind whatever incremental step moves us in that direction. And they'll frame it however they want to frame it, but that's the reason they're doing it, is because they want to keep us moving in that direction. Libertarians, we want to keep moving in the direction that we can. And, my view on it is I'm willing to support whatever policy gets a majority of us across the finish line. So, the policy debate that you'll have in the District of Columbia over education reform might be different from the policy debate you have in, say, Nevada on education reform or in Alabama on education reform, because it's driven by what the voters there care about.
So, I guess one particular sticking point that you might get asked about a lot, I don't know, but to me it kind of screams out the whole "is this too far" policy mm-hmm. question is the abortion plank of the Libertarian mm-hmm. Party. Now, I take issue with this plank tremendously because it says essentially the Libertarian Party plank says it should be totally no government involvement in regulating abortion. And it says, leave this up to people to decide for themselves. And then it said, but then people don't admit that that is the maximalist pro-choice position, to have no legal infringements on protecting life at all. How can somebody who is a libertarian but believes that an unborn baby is a life and therefore abortion violates the non-aggression principle, that seems like from that perspective, which a lot of people hold, one of the key functions that government should do is stop people from hurting other people. How is that plank defensible?
Well, it's the position of abortion. I think you did accurately describe it, and that it leaves for people to decide. I wouldn't describe that as the maximalist abortion, pro-abortion, pro-choice position. That's the Democratic Party position, which is government funding and all sorts of stuff that I don't think.
Fair enough. Fair support. Point.
It's a reality that libertarians disagree on the abortion issue. Some libertarians emphasize the bodily integrity of the woman, and the importance that government not intrude on the decisions between her and her doctor. And then, you know, there are libertarians that ascribe to the position you just described that you mentioned, that the rights of the fetus are paramount, and that government has a role in that. You know, I'm pro-choice, and I think most libertarians are pro-choice. I don't support government funding of abortion. And I'm very concerned about any kind of government, you know, bringing in the state to, I don't know, arrest doctors, arrest mothers, you know, whatever it would take. I think Harry Brown in 1996, their presidential candidate, had a line of, if you had government doing that kind of stuff, government's so counterproductive at some of these things that within a couple of years, you'd probably have men having abortions. So the old saying, abortion is safe, legal, and rare. And, you know, the real way to do that is through voluntary persuasion and making sure that we have safe sex education and all sorts of other stuff to make sure that people know there are alternatives out there for abortion. But as far as some government war on abortion, I mean, you're right, our platform's not consistent with that.
I don't disagree with anything you just said, and I don't want to get bogged down in like a debate about abortion, right? Because libertarians, I think, can disagree about it in philosophical and good faith terms.
Yeah.
Why not delete the plank and let every candidate decide for themselves? Because you might be right that like a majority are pro-choice, but there's a sizable number of libertarians that are pro-life.
Yeah. And, you know, we do have our candidates make the call on that. And, you know, I think people read things in that plank that aren't in there. I mean, the plank says that you decide for yourself, and that we, you know, there's kind of a parameter for the libertarian perspective on this, but ultimately libertarians decide for themselves. But I should say that, you know, the platform's not within, you know, it's not like I have dictatorial power over the platform.
Right.
The platform's written by Libertarian Party members and delegates to our national convention, and it's applied by all of our candidates. So ultimately, you should, you know, when you're considering voting for a libertarian candidate, and if this is your number one issue, you should reach out to that candidate and see where they come down on it.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I would encourage everyone to view the candidates as individuals with their own positions.
And I will also add that, you know, Republicans play up this issue because they use it as a wedge. Republicans are never going to do anything on abortion. They're never going to outlaw it. They're never going to make it go away. They certainly aren't going to, you know, work hard on the safe sex education and the stuff that have actually meaningfully reduced the number of abortions in the United States. It's a fundraising device. It's a voter turnout device that they use. So, you know, I don't think you're going to get where you want to go with the Republican Party either.
So shifting gears slightly, I'd like to talk about the presidential candidacy of Jo Jorgensen.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know, she was the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee. And you update me on any of the facts or specifics here, but I believe she got about 1% of the vote, which is down from about 3% of the vote with Gary Johnson in 2016. I thought Jo was a intelligent and by all appearances, a good person and a smart person and an accomplished person. But I thought from the beginning, I was very skeptical of her candidacy. It struck me as she had zero name recognition. She didn't have star charisma and it feels to me like 2020 was a missed opportunity, right? You had two very unpopular candidates. Jo, who was slow and kind of creepy and running with a very divisive VP nominee, and Trump and all the baggage that he brings that we all know well and good. Do you think that in hindsight, she was the wrong candidate, or that you guys ran the presidential race the wrong way? And was it a poor showing?
I think every libertarian wants, you know, a household name with lots of experience and credibility, who's an articulate defender of libertarian values and positions. And, you know, maybe is a millionaire so they can self-fund their campaign.
Yes.
You know, all those things. That's the ideal candidate. That candidate wasn't available, whoever they may be. I don't think that person exists, frankly, right now. So, you know, you have to decide what you want from that to make up the difference. And that was the dilemma facing libertarian delegates in choosing our 2020 presidential nominee. And we chose, and you know, I was one of them who chose Joe Jorgensen because I think it checked most of those boxes, certainly not all of them. We do face challenges as the Libertarian Party in getting an equal footing with the other parties of presenting our candidate. And you touched on some of them earlier. I mean, take ballot access. Democrats and Republicans are automatically on all 50 state ballots. They put themselves automatically on all 50 state ballots, but the Libertarian Party has to gather hundreds of thousands of signatures to get our candidates on the ballot. And that was even more problematic this time because of the ongoing COVID pandemic. It's really hard to get, you know, to go up somebody with a clipboard and hand them a pen and ask them to sign a thing. But, you know, we worked hard. We know how to overcome these obstacles. And Joe Jorgensen was one of three candidates, the others being Biden and Trump, who were on all 50 state ballots on the District of Columbia and Guam. So we were able to overcome that challenge, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot of money and a lot of time that the Democrats and Republicans don't have to spend. Access to the presidential debates, you mentioned that earlier. The Commission on Presidential, the presidential debates are run by a bipartisan commission made up of former chairs of the Democratic and Republican parties. It's not nonpartisan, it's not impartial, it's the former heads of the Democratic and Republican parties, and they decide who appears on the debate stage. 80% of Americans think anybody on the ballot in all 50 states should be included in the presidential debates. Most Americans think that we should have more choices than the Democratic and Republican parties, but we weren't allowed into the presidential debates. We've sued, we've petitioned, we've talked to sponsors, we've done polling, you know, all the things that we're that they say we're supposed to do in order to qualify for the debate stage, but they still don't let us in. And yeah, that's a problem because, of course, the media treats all of this as a horse race. They treat it as, a legitimacy thing. And if they're not covering you, then you can't get on. And it's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing because, we need some of these things in order to be treated as a credible opportunity. But until we are treated as a credible opportunity, we can't get some of these things. So, a lot of what I'm working on is getting more libertarians elected at the state and local level, building up that farm team, building up the credibility, getting people to understand that libertarians in elected office is a normal thing and is a valuable thing. And we'll keep building it up. And hopefully one day soon, we'll have that ideal libertarian presidential candidate who brings credibility and name recognition and money and lots of excitement. You show up at the convention, you help make that kind of stuff happen. You become a member of the Libertarian Party, you become involved in the party, you help influence some of these decisions.
So look, I'm completely sympathetic to all of that. I think the Libertarian Party gets screwed out of the debates. I don't know much about like true politics and campaigning, but from what I understand, it's very hard to get ballot access and the LP's put in a lot of work to get ballot access. So totally acknowledge.
One example of it was, and this wasn't even us. This was Kanye West who was running for president last year. He was trying to get on the ballot in Wisconsin. And so he got his signatures and his person showed up at the office to turn them in. And there was a notice on the door saying, we're closed because of COVID, but if you call this number, we'll come down and let you in. So she went back to her car, got her phone, called the number, got in. They opened the door, let her up, walked her up, and then said, I think it was 23 seconds too late. You've missed the deadline. And so they appealed. They filed a challenge and it went to the Wisconsin Election Commission, which is made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, and they decide who's on the ballot in Wisconsin. Guess how they voted on that appeal?
I wonder.
I didn't appear on the Wisconsin ballot. It really, the stories that you tell, and of course that you hear about ballot access challenges and all of this, it really is aggravating, and it's something that very few Americans are entirely aware of. I mean, it's entirely a rigged game, and that's why I'm all the more impressed with our hardworking activists in the Libertarian Party, where we're consistently able to get on all of the ballots, even despite all of these challenges put in our way.
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to all of that. And I agree. I wish the I wish the media would pay more attention to both Libertarian Party and Green Party candidates, especially Libertarian Party, because they've got three or four times as many votes and voters.
Sound like I'm complaining. I mean, we've got to earn this attention.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I'm going with. I feel like it is a two-pronged thing in the sense that to some extent, the media ignored Joe's candidacy unfairly. To some extent, though, Gary Johnson, by virtue of his accomplishments and credibility as a former governor, commanded more media attention in his own right on the merits. And I'm wondering, and I know this wasn't the Libertarian Party's fault. I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but Justin Amash pulled out of the race. Somebody like him as a nominee, a former U.S. congressman with, to some degree, national name recognition, at least in much of the media, wouldn't have commanded much more attention and serious candidacy than somebody who may have done her absolute best, but was no name in terms of politics before they became the candidate.
I mean, that's just the name of the game in politics. Something I tell people quite a lot is, you know, don't look for fairness in politics. It's about what gets clicks to websites. It's about what gets voters to vote for you. And you know, it's not always the best man or the best woman wins. That's just the name of the game. But the great thing about all of this is, unlike the Democratic and Republican parties, which are essentially rigged. I mean, we saw what they did with the Republican Party did with Ron Paul's candidacy in 2008 and 2012. And we saw what the Democratic Party did with Bernie Sanders' candidacy this last time. Unlike those parties, Libertarian Party presidential nominee is genuinely chosen by Libertarian Party members. State parties choose their delegates choose the nominees. And so, you know, if you've got strong feelings, and it sounds like you do, and I bet a lot of your listeners do, on who the Libertarians should nominate in 2024, get involved and help us make that decision.
So I'm in an interesting spot because obviously I do opinion and commentary, but I am I'm a journalist. So I sort of draw the line in terms of how far I actually get involved in politics. But I'll ask this then, what is your kind of pitch to people who are listening, anyone who listens to me is at least liberty curious, I would wager. They might be a Republican. They might be kind of unaffiliated. They might be conservative, but they're definitely at least liberty curious, right? What's your pitch to them for how and why they should get involved with the LP?
Sure. Well, it's quite a wave right now. So, you know, we got 1.8 million votes for president this last time, depending on the survey. And I've seen different ones. There's somewhere between 20 and 70 million libertarians in the United States. We've consistently gotten a certain amount of votes, but we've seen that grow dramatically. So right now there's about 600,000 registered libertarians. That's twice what it was 10 years ago. We've got libertarians serving in elected office at the state and local level again. We're seeing a dramatic increase in Libertarian Party membership and libertarian voter registration across the board. And that's only accelerated since the events at the Capitol and all the stuff that happened in the Trump administration. More and more Americans are recognizing that the future is not really with the Democratic Party that tries to solve every problem with a new government program and more spending. And I think a lot of people who pin their hopes on the Republican Party have been disillusioned by both the Trump years and what we've already seen in the post-Trump era, where they seem pretty determined to stay loyal to Donald Trump and to reject any effort to move away from that. I mean, if Trump ran right now for the Republican nomination, he would get it. That's just the future of the Republican Party there. If you care about libertarian solutions, if you care just making sure that we're part of the debate and that we do have a fair shot on all of that, consider getting involved. Join us at lp.org, register as a libertarian, become a candidate and all that. And you know, that that's what I'm doing because I wanted to make sure that I'm worried about our country. I'm worried about the direction we're going in, and I do not see the Republican Party or the Democratic Party riding the ship and steering us. I mean, what is our national debt at now? I mean, we've lost track. It's like 26 trillion or something like that, just an unfathomable number. And the I'm worried about all of it, and it's the Libertarian Party is the only one that understands all of this and provides the only real opportunity for electing people to make a difference. Just imagine what it would be like if we had a Libertarian elected official on every school board in the country and in every city council in the country, and a caucus of Libertarians in every state legislature. I'm not even talking about a majority, but even just a handful of them to keep the rest of them honest. I can tell you it would be game-changing, and I've seen that firsthand from the Libertarians that we do have. Marshall Burt, representative in Wyoming, everybody wants to co-sponsor his bills there. And John Andrews in Maine, and then hundreds of local Libertarian elected officials making a real difference for policy. We as a country have tried the Democratic Party thing so many times. We've tried the Republican Party so many times. Nothing seems to get better. Everything seems to get worse politically. It's time to try something new and help us join it and make it a success.
All right, Joe, I think that is a good place to leave the serious conversation. And now we'll shift to the most important part of the podcast every week. Yep. What is your most controversial food opinion? And I have to tell listeners not to hold this against the entire Libertarian Party. This is just the view of Joe.
Oh, gosh. I love Olive Garden. And we've got an Olive Garden in, I'm in D.C. here. There isn't any in D.C. There's one in Maryland, one in Virginia, and we'll go to them, my husband and I, occasionally. Olive Garden was the fancy restaurant for me growing up as a kid. That's where we went for special occasions. That's where we went on prom night. That's where we went for birthdays. So that stuck with me. And, it's familiar food, and I appreciate it, and I love going there. Something I always tell people is on New Year's Day, at least in most normal New Year's, there's an Olive Garden that looks over Times Square. And if you want to go to the Times Square thing and you don't want to stand there in the freezing cold without access to a bathroom for hours, the Olive Garden, which has, it's a two-story one, and it overlooks the ball there. I mean, they've got, they do a thing where that you go there and they'll give you unlimited food, of course, that unlimited salad and breadsticks and access to a bathroom and all that. And it's you can stay warm and watch the fun on New Year's. And so it's, I guess I sound like a company spokesman or something, but it's, I do like Olive Garden. I know a lot of people don't, but that's
there you go. Very
controversial.
Yeah, look,
I
like Olive Garden. There's some Italian food snobs out there who think it's no good. I am a fan, but I guess we'll have to hear from the listeners who know where to find me on Twitter and email. What do they think of Olive Garden? And with that, that will be it for this week, guys. If you like the show, make sure you go ahead and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And with that, Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Talk to you guys all next week.
You are listening to Breaking Boundaries with Brad Palumbo.